You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I am Jeff Hayden. Our topic tonight will be the inherent powers of the president, more particularly whether President Trump can be placed under subpoena, compelled to answer questions, can shut down the Russia investigation, or even pardon himself. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number to us right here in the studio is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or if you're outside the local dialing area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. In the studio with me tonight is someone who I find it, he's somewhat of a legend in this business and with whom it's a real privilege to share this microphone, and that would be Dean Johnson. Dean is an attorney in Redwood City, but what you may not know, he's an Emmy-nominated legal and political analyst who's appeared hundreds of times on every major broadcast and cable news network in the United States. I could go on and on, but let me stop there. I'd like to first welcome you to Your Legal Rights.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jeff. Pleasure to be here.
And again, I'd like to start by inviting anyone who has an interest in our system of laws, the checks and balances on the presidential powers, and this should be all of us, to call in. And again, our number is 415-841-4134. And with that, Dean, let me welcome you. What I'd like to start with is a big picture question. Just who is Robert Mueller? Tell us a little about what he's investigating and how do his investigation, how does his role, how does this all this relate to our government?
Well, personally, Robert Mueller is something of a legend in American politics. He was the director of the FBI, and as such, he would have normally served a 10-year term after being appointed by George W. Bush. But he was so good and so skillful at navigating the political landscape that President Barack Obama went to Congress and said, "Would you extend this man's term?" And they did. So Robert Mueller is a former FBI director who has served under Republicans and Democrats. He is himself a Republican. He's the FBI agent's FBI agent, the prosecutor's prosecutor. And his role right now is the role of special prosecutor, which is sort of an institutional safety valve within American government. The special prosecutor is assigned, or one is hired, when there are potential criminal cases, criminal investigations, prosecutions, where the people who are normally in charge of criminal investigations and prosecutions, i.e. the president, the vice president, the attorney general, would have a conflict of interest because they might themselves be either the targets of or witnesses in the investigation.
So this could really not be limited to the president, but somebody in a high-ranking position that they might answer to?
Certainly. It can. Special prosecutors have a mandate that goes in any direction. They're generally told to investigate a certain problem, whether it be Jimmy Carter's peanut business or Russian interference in the presidential election. And they are told to investigate, and any crimes that they might uncover, even if arguably unrelated to that original mandate, they are allowed to prosecute.
Karen in Berkeley, you're on Your Legal Rights. Welcome.
Oh, good evening, gentlemen. So what I'd like to say is that when the President of the United States takes the oath of office on his inauguration, he puts his right hand on what the Lincoln Bible and swears to protect and defend the Constitution to the best of his ability from all danger, foreign and domestic. I believe that's part of his speech. And so, and he has to follow the laws of the Constitution. So let's just go to tariffs now, which was Section 10. He was not allowed to put tariffs on Canada or Mexico because that was up to Congress. And since he has been in office, he has done nothing but violate the Constitution, its laws, gut the government, threaten the citizenry by getting rid of their health care and not spending money on infrastructure, but using it to beef up the military, which he said he wasn't. He has been grossly negligent in fulfilling anything that he said he was, and he has not done anything to, as they say in the Constitution, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common good, promote the general welfare. None of that is happening. And so by terrorizing American citizens with his reckless rhetoric and his...
Karen, can you ask us a question?
Actually, Karen, I appreciate your views. I don't want to cut you off. But what we really wanted to focus on tonight, or at least the beginning of it, is not so much the politics. I know there are a lot of listeners out there who share the views that we have perhaps the wrong person in the office. But what I really wanted to focus on tonight are the nuts and bolts, how the system of checks and balances really work with a president who himself may or may not be found to have had his hands in the cookie jar. We've been in this place, I believe, three times in history. It's a little uncertain to most people out there exactly what the role of the president is, what the role of the prosecutor is. So we're going to go through that in a bit more. It's very possible that later in the show we will circle back to the politics, and I would welcome you to call back in. But at this point, we're just not there yet.
Hey, Karen, before you go, let me just tell you something. I have a sister who lives in North Carolina, and she's an evangelical Christian, and she thinks that Donald Trump is sent by divine providence. She is as far opposite from you as you can be. But remember, the question here on this program today, and I would ask you to do a sort of a thought experiment. This was suggested by Professor Charles Black at Yale University. Do this experiment. Think about if you didn't know who Donald Trump was personally, and you just had to abstract from that. You were behind a veil of ignorance, and you didn't know who was sitting in that presidential office. Would you think that he has done something that would allow or require his removal from office? And that's what we're really talking about tonight. But call in again later after you've had time to think about that.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Karen. So you were talking a little bit about Robert Mueller, and as a prosecutor, he has a tie locally to this area, does he not?
Yeah, he was actually what we call the United States Attorney. He was the chief prosecutor for the Northern District of California for some time. So he had an office in San Francisco, and he was in charge of prosecuting the federal crimes that arose in and around the Bay Area. And legend has it that Robert Mueller is the prosecutor's prosecutor. It's so woven into his DNA to investigate and prosecute crimes that at one point he was offered a huge salary to go into a major firm here locally and do defense work, to go to the other side. And he just couldn't do it because multi-million-dollar clients would come in. They would tell Robert Mueller what they did, and he would look at them and he would say, you know what? I think you're guilty.
With that, speaking of guilt, some of you have not been calling in tonight. We would love to hear from you. Again, our number here in the studio is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. So I guess what has Mr. Mueller been doing?
What he has been doing is something that is truly unique in Washington politics these days. He's been keeping his mouth shut and telling the people that work with him to keep their mouths shut. He plays everything very close to the vest. He doesn't announce anything in advance, but... if you read very, very carefully the documents that come out when he gets an indictment, and he's gotten about a dozen of those now, there are things that you have to file with the federal court called sentencing statements explaining why you've accepted a certain plea bargain. The prosecution files that. He's telling us a story. And it's a fascinating story, and he's giving us little chapters here and there. In his early statements, he talked about how there were initial contacts through indirect sources between Russia and the Trump campaign. In the later filings, he talks about what seems to be almost a modus operandi later in the campaign and into the days around the inauguration, when it seemed almost a daily occurrence that people working with and under Donald Trump would be contacting Russians and asking them for advice, asking them for help, talking about strategy. There was even attempts to create back channels by which they could discuss without the ear of intelligence agencies listening in. And I think what he's telling us is that this is the tip of the iceberg. This was something that was much, much bigger than any of us suspect. And eventually, Robert Mueller, I think, is going to tell us the whole story.
And again, nobody who has yet to be convicted, we're not saying exactly how things happened, if they happened, if the president was involved. This is an ongoing saga that we're still really learning about and exactly what his guilt was. But I guess my question for you is, what have they uncovered so far? Have there been crimes directly related to the Trump campaign?
The short answer is no. Nobody has really been indicted or charged with anything that you could say is directly related to collusion with Russia. There have been discussions about violations of Fair Campaign Practices Act, an obscure statute called the Logan Act. Most of what we've seen, virtually all of what we've seen in terms of indictments and pleas, are things that were uncovered as part of the periphery of the investigation, or things that were that occurred in the investigation itself, like lying to the FBI or lying to Congress or misstatements, perjurious statements, and so on.
Douglas from Treasure Island, you're on Your Legal Rights. Welcome.
Hi. Yeah. Thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate the topic, as I'm sure a lot of people do. I wanted to see why the emoluments clauses that seem to have been in place for presidents to commit these types of, crimes would be a firm established thing, but it doesn't seem like that's gone anywhere, and I'm just curious why.
Yeah.
Before you answer, sure. Can you give a brief explanation for other listeners who may not be familiar with the emoluments clauses refer to?
One of the most obscure passages in the Constitution.
Thank
and
you.
Essentially, what it says is that if you're in public office, if you're in high public office, that you cannot accept anything of value or benefit from a foreign power or an agent of a foreign power. It's one of those things that has been almost a dead letter, as far as I know, and if there's a constitutional historian out there, you can correct me. There's never been a prosecution. There's never been an attempt to impeach anybody over a violation of the Emoluments Clause. So like so much of this, we're really going where no one has gone before. We're going into undiscovered and uncharted territory in terms of the law. It's an exciting time, but in many ways it's a frightening time as well.
One of the things this reminds me, I hearken back to the Carter administration. And President Carter, before taking office, sold off his peanut farm for the simple reason that he didn't believe that there's a place in the business world for a sitting president. This is fairly uncharted territory where we have a president operating hotels, resorts, and actually using them for conducting business.
Yeah, as far as we can tell, it's totally uncharted territory. It's a new frontier. The standard practice has been for presidents who may have some wealth, a nest egg put away, or an ongoing business to put all of their assets in what's called a blind trust. So it's managed by somebody on their behalf, but the president doesn't have any idea what's going on. Donald Trump, on the other hand, has apparently been very active in his business, as has his family, a multi-billion-dollar business. And there are the rumors out there that the power of the office has been used, that there have been promises of connections or getting the ear of the president if certain business deals were done. But that's at the level of rumor right now. And being an old-time prosecutor myself, I like to go where the evidence goes, and I want to see some more evidence on that before I start talking about prosecuting or indicting people for that.
And the rumors of the government in North Korea planning a major vacation in Florida, those are just rumors at this point.
Yeah, those are rumors. And I wouldn't put a lot of weight on that. I mean, I don't see myself buying a ticket for a vacation in North Korea anytime soon.
Douglas, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks, Doug.
Laura from Berkeley, you're on Your Legal Rights. Welcome.
Thank you. My question was similar. About the emoluments clause, I understand there were several lawsuits in process brought by Democrats, and I just wondered, what's the timeline on that? And are they active, or are they just sitting on someone's desk? And what do you think the natural progression of those would be?
Laura, you brought up a very good question, and let me ask this to Dean. Laura's question brings up a very good point, and that is whether the president can be sued, whether the president at this time is immune, or if lawsuits are parked, or exactly what the mechanics are.
Well, the president most certainly can be sued. Bill Clinton was sued. Other presidents have been sued civilly. And by civilly, I mean private citizens suing them for damage, for some harm done. Suing under the Emoluments Clause raises so many issues. There's a question about whether there's what we call a cause of action for a violation of the Emoluments Clause, whether it's private citizens or even public officials can do that. There's a question of, well, okay, if there is a basis for a lawsuit, a cause of action, what would be the remedy? Would it be damages, removal from office, an injunction which says cut out whatever you're doing, disgorgement of resources? All of those are questions that would take a case like that up through the circuit courts, the federal appellate courts, and probably ultimately to the Supreme Court. And the time frame on those can be anywhere from 5 years to decades, depending on the size, number, and complexity of the suits.
Laura, I hope that answered your question for you, and thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights.
Okay, thank you.
Travis from San Francisco, welcome. You're on Your Legal Rights.
Oh, hi. Yes. My question is, Donald Trump, our president, and getting involved with Russia, and there being problems with Italy, but do you think it's true or is it false? What's real, what's not? Because a lot of things I'm hearing are he should make deals because the European Union and this and that, or and Italy is just a ruse. And so all this stuff that Trump has got involved with, like his legal stuff or all these meetings he's been having, what is the basis? Is it to cover up and so we get caught up in the judicial, or is it to just make sure no one really knows? I'm not sure how to go about the question, but it's something like that.
Well, Travis, let me make a suggestion. Do what I do. Hold your breath, listen closely, and follow the evidence as it emerges. So right now, and I think I said this before, but I'll say it again, we as the American public are just looking at the tips of two icebergs. We know on the one hand that whatever happened between the Trump campaign and Donald Trump, or Donald Trump's campaign and Russia, was huge. There were more Russian operatives in the campaign than you could shake a stick at. There were regular meetings with Anton Kislyak, who was a master spy for Russia. Where all of that went and what all of that implied, we still don't know. On the flip side of that, the investigation, I think, is much bigger than we're being told. Again, I think we're seeing the tip of another iceberg, because even before there was a Robert Mueller, there was a joint task force involving the NSA, the National Security Agency, the CIA, the Justice Department, and the FBI, and they formed a joint task force to investigate whatever was going on. If it's big enough to bring all of those agencies in, it's big, and I think you just wait and see the evidence as it emerges, as I'm sure it will over the next few months.
Now, we're all waiting to see what the evidence shows, but Rudolph Giuliani recently said that Robert Mueller would wrap up the Russia investigation by September. How realistic is this, that the investigation will conclude this quickly? And I have a follow-up question when that.
Sure. It's not realistic at all. I mean, that's a pipe dream. To wrap up any federal investigation, even a minor drug case, in a matter of a year or 2 years, is moving at a breakneck pace. And this is probably the most complex investigation ever undertaken by a federal prosecutor and by the FBI. As we've already seen, there are many, many, many potential suspects, many novel legal issues. issues and many different aspects of the investigation. I think this could go on for years. It may plague the Trump administration until it's at an end.
Travis, I hope that answered your question for you, and thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights. Tess from San Francisco, welcome. You're on Your Legal Rights.
Hi. You kind of answered one of my first questions, which was, during this process, how does one define the end of it? And does Trump have any control over when that happens? And then the second question is kind of a little off the cuff, but what if it wasn't Russia that supposedly that the Trump administration was involved in, but it was Canada? So someone who's not considered a, quote, I don't remember if it was Axis of Evil under Bush, but in any event, someone more friendly. Would that be as much of an issue?
To answer your first question, when does it end? A special prosecutor's mandate, his engagement, has a definite end. When he thinks he's done, the special prosecutor is supposed to issue a report to the attorney general, which would also be seen by the president, and essentially it says, I'm done. This is what I've found. This is who I indicted and prosecuted. These are the results. And that particular field may be empty. It may be that we didn't find anything. That has certainly happened with special prosecutors in the past. But yeah, there is a definite end, and it ends with Robert Mueller's final report and his packing up his bags and going back to his private life.
Tess, thank you for joining us. I hope that answered your question. And again, for those of you listening, if you have questions for my guest, our phone number right here in the studio is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And Carol from Oakland, welcome. You're on Your Legal Rights.
Hi, yeah, I had a question. Who pays Robert Mueller and his staff, and whether that means that he's beholden to whoever he's receiving his salary or payment from?
He's paid out of the budget of the Justice Department.
Okay,
trust me on this. Robert Mueller is not beholden to anyone. He's a prosecutor's prosecutor, and he does what prosecutors do. He goes where the evidence is going. It takes him, and he doesn't care whose toes he steps on when he does that.
Great. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you, Carol. Thank you for joining us. Let's talk a little bit about the way that Mr. Mueller goes about his task. Can he compel the president to come and talk to him?
Yes, and that's been done before. It can be done the hard way or the easy way. The special prosecutor has the leverage of the subpoena power. He can issue a subpoena and order the president, or have the court order the president, to show up and answer questions. He could also issue a grand jury subpoena and have the president come and testify, though the president might at that point claim the Fifth Amendment, were he a target of the investigation. But almost always it doesn't get to that point, because everyone realizes that it's in their best interest to have the president come and talk voluntarily. So the terms, the time, the place, the parameters of the discussion are negotiated by counsel, and they happen in a much more genial manner. That's in everybody's interest, because it doesn't look like the president is hiding anything. It doesn't look like he has to be forced to come and talk. And every prosecutor and every investigator knows that a witness who comes in voluntarily is a lot more talkative and in a lot better mood than somebody who's forced to come in.
But the president, of course, heads the Justice Department. So if he says, no, I don't want to participate, I don't want to come and talk to him, who's going to enforce it?
Then the courts will enforce it, and that's what happened in the Nixon years, and that's very similar. We're talking about subpoenas for documents, but what we call the Saturday Night Massacre in the Nixon years, where Richard Nixon refused to turn over tapes to a special prosecutor, that was litigated all the way up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said, yes, the president, like everybody else, is subject to a subpoena. He has to turn over stuff. He has to to talk. Of course, there's also this thing called executive privilege, which he might assert, but we're going to find in this case that there was no executive privilege. And so, Mr. Nixon, you have to talk or you have to turn over whatever you have to the special prosecutor. It's important to remember there's some paradoxes here. The special prosecutor is an employee of the Justice Department. The president is the titular head of the Justice Department. So in a sense, he's Robert Mueller's boss. But at the same time, the special prosecutor is hired precisely because there's a conflict of interest and because he's looking into his boss's own conduct.
Oliver from San Francisco, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my question. I have a question about, well, let me start with this way. I was reading an article in an online journal called The Intercept. Glenn Greenwald and Jerry Scahill, I don't know if that sounds familiar to any of you guys, and they were basically covering meetings with between Trump's representatives and members of officials representing UAE, United Arab Emirates, and Eric Prince, and a fellow whose name is George Nader, who has apparently he's a fixer for a lot of Russian oligarchs, and basically they were suggesting that the really there may not be absolute smoke and gun proof with as far as campaign involvement with the Russians, but there certainly is with UAE and also the Saudi Arabia. Have you heard anything about that? And of course, it involves several private intelligence agencies from Israel, private. And I was wondering if you'd heard anything about that. And they had also quoted several sources from New York Times as well. I read this in The Intercept not too long ago, about last week.
Yeah, I've heard it. I've heard all of those things. Well, I don't think I've heard all of them because there are any number of theories out there and rumors. Like I say, hold your breath, listen carefully, do everything you can to filter out the fake news because there's a lot of that out there, and just wait and see what the evidence shows.
Oliver, thank you for joining us. Wayne from San Carlos, you're on Your Legal Rights.
Hi, I have a couple of questions. One is, Giuliani has stated that the president can pardon himself. He stated that he can't actually be indicted. Are those actually things that can't be prosecuted while standing as a president? Is that valid? The last couple of questions are is, number one, it looks like he's pardoning various people, and it might be strategic to let them know that they're off the hook if they get prosecuted or, charged, et cetera. And obstruction of justice, what's the level of intent and proof needed to prove that? Because it seems like that's the most obvious one. His bonehead people seem to be kind of like more like Three Stooges, so it's hard to say that their bumbling is collusion, but obstruction of justice seems like something he has done. Thank you.
Wayne, thank you for all those questions. Let me be quite frank with you, we are going to answer virtually every one of those questions, but you've mapped out pretty much the next half hour. So I would like to break those down and ask those a little bit over time. Stay with us. I will get you all of those answers. I think we're all very interested in hearing each and every one of those questions. But as I said, that's most of the next half hour. I guess the one thing I would like a short answer to before we go for a very brief break is, if the president chooses not to answer questions or not to turn over evidence at the break, can the president obstruct justice since he is the Justice Department?
Yes, absolutely. And the important thing to understand here is what you might call the president/person distinction. The paradox here is that the president is the president. He gets to say what the Justice Department prosecutes, what it enforces, what laws it enforces, what it doesn't enforce as president. But the president is also a human being, Donald Trump. And if it's not the president acting in his presidential capacity, but it's Donald Trump acting in his personal capacity for some sort of corrupt motive to get the Justice Department to do or not do something, yeah, he can potentially be prosecuted for obstruction of justice. However, as you may suspect, and as I think our caller suspects, there is a huge gray area. For instance, instance, when Donald Trump said to James Comey, could you go easy on Michael Flynn? That's one of those things that prosecutors get asked all the time as a favor to a friend, but it's also something that a president might wish to see happen.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights, 91.7 KALW-FM in San Francisco. If you have a question for our callers, our number in the studio is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
One of the things we talked about briefly in the first half hour was Rudy Giuliani and some of the things he was saying. He said recently that, as we said, that Mr. Mueller should wrap up the investigation by September. And we talked about whether that's realistic. But what we didn't talk about is whether there's an implied threat there. So the first question that this brings up is, suppose Mr. Mueller's investigation is ongoing, September, October. Can President Trump simply fire Robert Mueller?
Well, let me answer two questions. Can he and should he? Can he? Yes. It could be done indirectly by the president ordering his subordinates, namely the acting attorney general or deputy attorney general, to fire Robert Mueller. And Rosenstein could then turn around and say no, as did Elliot Richardson to President Nixon.
And I was going to say that we've been down this road before.
We've been down this road.
It didn't turn out that well, did it?
Did not turn out that well. Legally, he could do that. Another way the president could get rid of Robert Mueller is that there actually is no special prosecutor statute right now. Special prosecutors are governed simply by Justice Department regulations. The president could say, I'm suspending those regulations. We're not going to have any more special prosecutors. Either way, even though the president might be within his legal rights as a practical political matter, it very well could spell disaster. And it's at that point that the president is really rolling dice. Will the Congress, as did the Congress in the Nixon era, have the internal fortitude to come forward and say, you know what, that's not right. That violates our constitutional principles, and we're going to start looking at some articles of impeachment. Or will they not? Will they be the same spineless Congress that we've seen for the last few months?
So we've scratched the surface on a few different issues now. You mentioned impeachment. What is impeachment and how does it work?
Okay. The best way to think about impeachment is it's sort of like a criminal case. The impeachment is not the conviction. The Congress decides to impeach by issuing articles of impeachment, which is sort of like a criminal complaint. It says, we accuse the president of doing so-and-so-and-so, and the so-and-so-and-so has to be what we call high crimes and misdemeanors. Once the articles of impeachment are issued, there's an actual trial. But it's not like a trial you've ever seen. It's a trial before the United States Senate. Chief Justice of the United States presides over the trial as the judge. Members of Congress act as prosecutors. The president himself can have his private counsel. And at the end, the Senate votes. And if they vote by a two-thirds majority that the bill of impeachment is true, the president is simply removed from office and barred from ever holding a federal office again.
Has this ever happened?
It's never gotten that far. We've had three presidents impeached, and in the first one, the Andrew Johnson impeachment, Andrew Johnson escaped conviction, which is what they call the result of the impeachment trial, by one vote. William Jefferson Clinton was impeached, but he was acquitted. And then we had Richard Nixon, for whom articles of impeachment were issued, but of course he resigned before we could ever get much further.
And again, if you have questions for my guest, our phone number here in the studio is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Again, you're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW-FM 91.7 in San Francisco, and I am Jeff Hayden. So we've talked about the impeachment and how that works, but can a sitting president be indicted or arrested or prosecuted?
You know, one thing you have to understand, Jeff, is that the Constitution is not like an owner's manual. It's more like a framework or a set of guidelines. That's one of the questions that's not clearly answered. But I think if you go back and you read between the lines, the better answer is that no, a sitting president cannot be indicted. Because in the passages that talk about impeachment itself, the very last clause says that those parties convicted, that is, somebody who goes through the trial in the Senate and is removed from office, then can be indicted, prosecuted, tried, and or jailed for any high crimes or misdemeanors that he may have committed. Also, in the pardons clause, it says that the president may pardon anything other than an impeachment. So what that suggests to me is that the founding fathers had in mind a sort of an orderly procedure where the president is first impeached, tried, and then if taken out of office, he could be prosecuted for any of the crimes that he may have committed.
I hate to keep bringing up Rudy Giuliani, but he is probably the most highly paid straw man in the nation right now. He's taken some pretty extreme positions, and one of them is that the president can simply pardon himself. Do you think he can?
No, I think that's completely wrong. I think that would be contrary to the entire structure of the Constitution. And to understand that, you have to go back and do a little history. The framers of the Constitution, the people who actually wrote it, were highly educated. And one of the books that they had read was a book called Treatise on Government by John Locke. And that starts, the very first sentence of the treatise says something to the effect of, the essence of injustice is when a person is a judge in his own case. And pardoning yourself is being a judge in your own case. And you see permeating the structure of the Constitution, prohibitions against this sort of self-dealing, being a judge in your own case, clause after clause. So I think that would be, if you do your history and you fill in the framework and do what the Founding Fathers intended, pardoning yourself would be just anathema to the Founding Fathers and would be contrary to the whole spirit as well as the letter of the Constitution.
Maggie from Oakland, you are on Your Legal Rights. Welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Hi, Maggie.
Hi. If my understanding is, whether it's a civil or criminal trial, somebody gets up and they lie, and it's perjury, the other side brings out the next person and they try to impeach the testimony. But in this case, we already know that Trump, on one or more occasions, it's a well-known fact that he lies under oath. The one thing I'm thinking about is deposition. Nonetheless, it's an established fact that he has lied under oath. So
these are alternative facts.
I'm sorry?
No, these are alternative facts, Maggie.
Yes, not lies,
right.
Just
okay.
An alternative reality, Maggie.
In
come on.
In my alternative reality, I still need to know the answer. So if he's lying to Mueller, does Mueller just write it down as one more lie and let it go on, or is there back and forth where Mueller says, well, but so-and-so B said and so-and-so C said? I mean, do they go back and forth, or does he just accept his lies and move on?
No, ma'am. You don't know your Robert Mueller's and your prosecutors. There's an old saying that the greatest engine for getting at the truth is cross-examination. And prosecutors like Robert Mueller just live for the opportunity to cross-examine. And I guarantee you, If the president sits down across the table from Robert Mueller and Robert Mueller asks him a question, Robert Mueller already knows the answer, and he's got the evidence right there in his briefcase to prove what the right answer is. And if Donald Trump were to lie, he'll pull out that evidence, confront Donald Trump with it, and the next thing you know, Donald Trump will be indicted for lying to an FBI investigator, which is just as bad as perjury. And just as a footnote, Mr. Mueller, if you're listening and you want me to take on the job of cross-examining Donald Trump when he comes in, I will do it for free. I would give anything for that opportunity.
Wouldn't that be great?
Wouldn't that be fun?
I lived through Watergate, and I was glued to the TV. Is there any chance it'll be televised?
We're not there yet. I'm sure the interview between Donald Trump and Robert Mueller won't be televised. But if there are articles of impeachment issued and we're going to a trial in the Senate, or if there's even a committee investigating to determine whether there should be articles of impeachment, you can bet that those politicians aren't going to miss that photo op. And it's going to be the highest rated series on TV in a long time.
One of the things Maggie brought up is whether there's going to be a hearing, whether it's going to be televised. But is this essentially political theater? And is it likely that the fact that the Congress, much of the judiciary, and the president all hail from the same party, is that likely to interfere with whether there would be an investigation?
Yeah, you know, the question is, as I said before, whether a Republican Congress and a Republican Senate are going to have the intestinal fortitude to start these proceedings. Back in the Watergate era,
They waited till the 11th hour,
and they waited till something happened, which is that the president of the United States was ordered to do something by a court. He was issued a subpoena and told to turn over evidence, and he said no. And that's the essence of a constitutional crisis, when somebody in power says that I am not going to obey the law. That's when we become a government of men and not a government of laws, and that's when public officials of good faith and honesty and integrity have to step in. Whether we've got any of those in Congress, whether we've got enough of them, that remains to be seen. Let's keep our fingers crossed. And oh, by the way, within a few months, it might not be a Republican Congress.
Yes,
it might be a Congress that's more prone to issuing articles of impeachment, if you know what I mean.
I understand. Although I actually don't want him impeached. This is personal. I think Mike Pence is one scary guy.
Yeah,
well, I do want him. You know, I really actually, the best thing that could happen, am I allowed to, like, give opinions on this? Or you just want legal books?
Sure.
Maggie, you can give an opinion if it's fairly short. But remember, primarily we want to be talking about the nuts and bolts and how this all works and a system of checks and balances rather than we could all talk about politics. And I suspect that in this region, an overwhelming majority of people are on the same page.
Go for it, Maggie.
I have one more actual question. How common is it that they get their questions written in advance so their team can go over them?
All subject to negotiations. Like I said, it depends on the parameters of the interview. Donald Trump, I suspect, if his lawyers are smart, they'd want the questions in advance. But Robert Mueller is, trust me, Robert Mueller is sitting there waiting to surprise Donald Trump with a question. And he might just go off script himself and ask a question that wasn't part of the negotiation. Just to see where it goes. Because we all know that once Donald Trump is sitting there at the table, he has a little tendency to go off script as well, and that's exactly what cross-examiners love.
Well, and he lies about everything, so it's easy for him to go off script and lie. Is there any situation in which he can give written answers and not have to testify in person?
Sure. That's all subject to negotiation between the lawyers. It just depends on what kind of deal you can work. All of those things have been done, and all of them have been tried.
Maggie, thank you for joining us, and
thank
I hope
you so
we
much.
Answered all your questions. Thank you for being
That's
on Your
it.
Legal Rights.
Thank you.
And if anybody else would like to talk to my guest, the phone number here in the studio is 415-841-4134. That's 841-4134 in area code 415. And we're talking about checks and balances, powers of the president, the power of the special counsel, whether the president can participate in the process, alter the process. But you're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW-FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden, and here in the studio with me is Dean Johnson. Dean is an Emmy-nominated legal and political analyst. Many of you have heard him on local television, but in fact, he has appeared hundreds of times in every major broadcast and cable news network in the United States, as well as overseas. He's been on Australian Broadcasting, BBC, even Al Jazeera. Interesting perspective to bring to the table here. Again, Your Legal Rights, 415 1-800-841-4134. And I see there's a number of calls coming in again, but one of the things that comes up, we've talked about impeachment, we've talked about indictment. The ultimate goal of impeachment is to remove somebody from office. Can the president be removed without an impeachment?
There's a thing called the 25th Amendment, which allows for the president to be removed from office when he no longer has the capacity to discharge the duties of his office. And the 25th Amendment is a really interesting addition to the Constitution because it raises the question about whether the framers' original intent still applies. You could argue very strongly that the creation of the 25th Amendment gives us a safety valve where even a sitting president might be indicted, and that indictment might itself become an incapacitating factor that prevents the president from discharging his duty, so that it would be appropriate to indict the president even pre-impeachment, and then have, if they think it's appropriate, have the vice president and the cabinet go to the Congress and say, you know, the president just can't do his job. He's under indictment. He may wind up in jail in a few days.
So it is rather interesting. We've talked about some of the things that are taking place mechanically. We've also talked a little bit about the investigation and what types of things are coming up in the context of the Russia investigation. They've also looked into some other areas. What else is the special prosecutor looking to?
Not so much looked into, but he's fallen into a number of different areas with people who worked in the Trump campaign. Money laundering, movements of money. There have been indications of violations of Fair Campaign Practices Acts, even violations potentially of an obscure statute called the Logan Act, which prevents private citizens from negotiating in the foreign policy area. Where those all go, we don't know. We know that Paul Manafort was indicted. We know that Michael Cohen is being looked at now, and we're not sure as of today exactly where that's going. It's spread far and wide. And the odd thing is, even though the core of this is the Russia investigation, there's been very little that's actually come out about Russian interference in our campaign process, which was the original concern that led to the appointment of the special prosecutor. But I have a feeling that's yet to come.
Michael from San Francisco, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thank you. I have another mechanical question. Okay. So let's say that President Trump is convicted and he turns around and pardons himself. What's the next step after that? Assuming that it's unconstitutional, how does that get reversed? Who does it go to? What's the process?
Michael, before my guest answers, let me ask you to clarify. You asked about the president being convicted. Are you referring to convicted at an impeachment trial, or are you talking about convicted of a criminal offense?
Yes, convicted after impeachment. Maybe I'm using the wrong word, but after impeachment.
Right. So he's convicted, and the Senate says, "All right, Mr. President, you've been convicted. You're now removed from office. Mr. Pence, you take over as President of the United States." And Donald Trump says, "Nope, I'm pardoning myself." If he's already been convicted, the problem is solved because he is not yet he is no longer the President of the United
right.
States. And in fact, if he's already been convicted and ejected from office, that pardon would be a null act, and he could be, if there were evidence that he were guilty of high crimes and misdemeanors, he could then be prosecuted criminally and conceivably put in prison. But I think the question you're trying to ask is, if it looks like he's going to be thrown out of office by the Senate, could he then pardon himself? And the answer, I think, is no. But then mechanically, what happens if he issues a pardon? Counsel for the Congress, which could be private appointed counsel, would then seek judicial review and seek to have the courts nullify that and enjoin him retrospectively from pardoning himself, saying you can't do that.
So can I, one more assumption, that let's say the Supreme Court are all, mostly his appointees or the majority, and it eventually goes to the Supreme Court and they favor him, could they legitimately say, nope, you're good, you're pardoned?
Yeah, they could decide pretty much whatever they want. They could say the self-pardon works. I don't see even the most conservative justice making that decision. I think if Antonin Scalia, if he's wherever Antonin is tonight, if he heard about that, he would turn over in his grave, because he was more than anything else an advocate for original intent. Conceivably they could say that. But think about the practical problem then. That would mean that two-thirds of the Senate had decided that this president was not fit to stay in office, and that he is now insisting, yeah, I'm going to stay in office anyway. The political ramifications, the practical ramifications are just mind-boggling. That would be chaos, and the chances of that happening and anybody sitting still for it, I think, are minimal.
Michael, thank you for joining us, and I hope we've answered your questions, and thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights. Tamara from El Cerrito, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yeah, hi, it's Tamara, but that's okay. It's, you know, everyone knows differently. Hi. Anyway, this is my question. Thank you so much for what you said, and I appreciate the breadth and the depth of Mueller's investigation. I was just curious what you thought about the speed in which he's proceeding. Is it on par with what you would expect with how complicated this is, or is it a little slow? Is it a little speedy? I was just wondering if you had any thoughts at all.
No, I think Robert Mueller's right on track. He's doing what federal prosecutors do. He's systematically indicting the little fish, and federal prosecutors indict those little fish, flip them, and use them to get the big fish. That's the signature move of federal prosecutors like Robert Mueller. He's doing that very well, and the thing I really like about it is he's not doing it in the spotlights. He's not doing it for a photo op. He's keeping the inner workings of his office quite secret and playing everything quite close to the vest.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Sure.
Tamara, thank you. Appreciate you joining us here on Your Legal Rights. We're Guy from Palo Alto is on the air. Welcome, Guy.
Hello there. Yes, I would like to know, is there any situation that could invalidate the presidential election? And if so, what would they do? Would they replace or be put in with a runner-up, or if Hillary Clinton would be taking office, if something like that were to happen?
Not now. In the interim time between the election and the inauguration, there's sort of a gray area as to what can happen with the Electoral College, and certain irregularities could possibly negate the election. But now that's a done deal. That's water under the bridge. We have to face it. Donald Trump is president, and we have to deal with that for good or for evil.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure,
Guy,
thank
you for joining us. Sam from San Francisco, welcome to
Hi,
Your Legal Rights.
My question is kind of a natural follow-on to the last question. Is there any context where a president could call off the next election?
Yeah, and that's called a coup d'etat. If the president called off the next election, that would be the essence, the mother of all constitutional crises, and we would be at a point where we no longer have a rule of law, we have a rule of Donald Trump, and then we're all going to have to decide what we do about that.
Are you aware, was there ever any sort of wartime context where they said, well, not right now, we can't do that, have an election?
No, the election has never been called off, but we have been in extreme situations in the past. Abraham Lincoln, for example, suspended the writ of habeas corpus, which is considered the foundation of liberty. And after the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln submitted himself to the Congress and said, yeah, that was illegal. If you want to impeach me for doing that, do it. But I think I had to save the Union. And that never went anywhere.
All right. Well, thank you.
Sure.
Sam, thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights. We're nearing the top of the hour. I guess the one question left is substantive, in that as often as the president says no collusion, is there evidence of a collusion? And for that matter, has anybody ever accused anyone of collusion?
Well, I think the Trump administration gets accused of collusion and denies it almost every day. The truth is, as I've said on radio and TV many times, there is no legal definition of collusion. You can look through the index of the penal code forever and you will not find the word collusion. What you will find is the word conspiracy. And is there evidence of a conspiracy? There's some there. I think there's probably enough to prosecute a number of people, but it's still coming, and we have to wait and see just exactly where we go.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW-FM, 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden, and here in my studio tonight has been Dean Johnson, Emmy-nominated legal and political analyst. And before we end the hour, I would like to give you a chance to take a minute or so and sum up if there's anything you would like to say.
Sure. I remember in 1972, Richard Nixon decided to roll the dice and see if he could be above the law. He refused the special prosecutor's request to produce evidence, and 7 months later, he resigned in disgrace. And so if you're listening tonight, Donald Trump, I have a message for you. Those who fail to learn the lessons of history are bound to retweet it.
And that will be the final tweet of the night. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Again, this is Dean Johnson, Redwood City-based attorney, Emmy-nominated legal and political analyst. It's been my pleasure having you here with me tonight. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. My guest tonight has been Emmy-nominated legal and political analyst and Redwood City attorney Dean Johnson. And next week, our guests will include Palo Alto attorney and recent member of the State Bar of California's Board of Trustees, Janet Brewer, and San Francisco attorney Alicia Gámez. We will be discussing estate planning for non-citizens and problems related to estate planning, child custody across international borders. 2 weeks from tonight, that is on June 27th, we'll be returning with Call a Lawyer program once again, operating here at KALW. Again, you're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 in San Francisco. Thank you for listening. And thank you for our production assistant, Martin McLean. And again, at the controls, as always, Joanne Marr. I'm Jeff Hayden.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.